April 10th, 2010, the oral history website Voices of Oklahoma was launched. We began collecting stories in 2009, so on this, our 14th anniversary, we would like to share the history of Voices of Oklahoma as we relate some of our experiences in collecting over 270 oral histories of Oklahomans. We will talk about how the concept originated, the many places we have visited for these recordings, and what we have learned, that teachers make a difference, that the gifts of talented artists are apparent at a very early age, and there are defining moments in all our lives, some more dramatic than others. We also want to give credit to those behind the scenes who have made this project successful. Our website is being used as a resource for education and research, providing primary source material for historians, scholars, and educators. Thank you for taking time to listen to the history of Voices of Oklahoma.
My name is John Erling. Today's date is March 24th, 2023. On April 10th of this year, 2023, we will be entering our 15th year of recording many very interesting Oklahomans, their oral histories. It's fun to hear the voices. Many of them have died, but we do have their stories. On the phone, we say, you know, it's really good to hear your voice. And so it will be good for future generations to hear the voices of those who have been recorded on voicesofoklahoma.com. So at this point in time in the history of our project, I thought it would be interesting to talk about the backstories to all these stories, some of my experiences reflecting on this journey. What have I learned? And so for the record, I have asked the longtime broadcaster, Dick Schmitz, to come in and help me tell this story. First of all, I should say thank you, Dick, for coming.
Thank you.
Dick is a longtime broadcaster. You were one of the original Big 7 DJs back in KAKC days. You dominated the ratings, number one station for almost a decade. You were program director of that station. And then eventually, as you moved on to another station, you became very production-oriented, and you became one of Tulsa's top voice talents. And then you formed your production company, Irving Productions, in a fast journey through your life. Is that about accurate?
I would say that's probably close.
Right. And you've received many, many honors. Ad Club with their highest honor, the Silver Addy in 72, the Ad Club's Lifetime Award, Tulsa Press Club Radio Icon. I'm actually skimming some of this. And then both of us are members of the Oklahoma Association of Broadcasters Hall of Fame.
I'm afraid you weren't going to mention that, but I wanted to say you were just as much in there as I was, or maybe more.
No, and so it's my honor to have you here. But you did voices for many famous commercials, and we'll just zero in on one, was Otasco.
Yeah, exactly.
And what did Otasco stand for?
Oklahoma Tire and Supply.
Right, and how did that commercial end?
Well, it actually ended with the phrase, thank you, here's your change. Remember, you always save at your friendly Otasco store, your home of better values.
You can't take that out of you, can you?
No, you can't. I've identified myself more times than you can imagine if I start to say that line at the end.
I'm quite certain. All right, well, let's get started.
I'd like to know some things about you that I probably know, but others might not, and it certainly would be worth looking into. How did you get started with the Voices of Oklahoma?
Voicesofoklahoma.com. It's a website dedicated to oral history. All right, Dick, this is the way it started. Walt Helmreich and I were friends for many, many years. And once a month, he would call, or his secretary would call, and say, it's time for your monthly lunch. Well, during the course of those lunches, over a period of 10 years, he kept telling me stories about his life, his family, his business. He was politically involved. And one day I said to him, well, Walt, why don't we record these stories? I shouldn't be the only one who hears them and your family. The public would be very interested. And he said, well, I think that's a good idea. He went away to Florida, and then he came back, and we recorded. And I said, and I get some of my best ideas by driving around, by the way. I was in my car, and I thought, well, maybe if we put his story and others like it on a website geared to educators, research students, and the general public. To hear your story, Walt, what do you think? And you never knew what he was going to say. And he said, well, I don't want to do a book. He says, my grandfather, Calcor, did a book, and nobody read it, so I don't want to do a book. I said, no, I'm not trying to do a book. I just want to record your stories. He says, I think that's a good idea. So then I said, okay, would you get your friend Henry Zero? Because they were close friends, and they actually lunched about once a week. He said, I will. And so I got the Henry Zero story, but then their foundations were the first ones to come in and support Voices of Oklahoma. That's how I got started. And let me just say, I am not a historian. I never majored in history. History was not interesting to me way back in my younger days. And so I was not trained for what I'm doing in any fashion. But I've always enjoyed interviewing people. Now, this website is unique in that it's dedicated to oral history. There are many institutions that do oral history. Oklahoma State University, OU, and others will record, but it's probably mainly for research, and it's not as readily available to the general public. Well, when I did it, because of radio, and I want everybody to hear everything we do, I set it up so that with one click, you can listen to now over 270 interviews, and the general public is listening. So it's for research and for the general public. You know, Dick, sometimes not being trained has its advantages because you don't know that you're breaking the rules or the unstated rules or the norms. And if I had been in the mindset of those historians or oral history historians, I may never done it this way. So sometimes ignorance is bliss, all right?
Correct.
Right.
It seemed like, now you just mentioned 200 and some people that you have interviewed, and I presume all of those, and this is a presumption, got on your program.
No, they're not, and I wish they were. I'm always behind about 30. The thing that set me back was in 2009, now 15 years ago, I started recording, and I recorded 30 interviews in that year. Then, when Wilma Mankiller died, we decided to hurry up and get the website going, and on April 10th, 2010, we actually launched. Well, I keep adding inventory, I record, and then I keep and then I produce. So there are about, generally about 30 that aren't on, and I'm hoping to close that gap, but good question.
Well, no matter how many people you have to talk to, over 200, as you mentioned, where do you do all these recordings? Do you travel a lot? Do you do them on the phone, or how does it work?
I want to do them in person as much as possible. So I go to offices. I've been in many boardrooms. I've been in many, many homes. Here in my own house where I have studios, I've done them here. So that's basically where I do, in person. I rarely want to do them by phone, and I've had to do them by phone. Sometimes to get somebody immediately, travel became a necessity, and I just couldn't make that work. But during COVID, I then resorted to the phone. So COVID went beginning in the late 2019 and 2021 and into 22. Then I did them by phone. But then we also explained why we were doing them by phone. And so we have a lot of COVID stories as a result of that. So that's basically where I set up studios.
Well, in all this involvement with people and the number of people that you have talked to, where have you traveled to get these interviews?
Well, interesting. I have traveled to New Mexico. Senator Fred Harris, former senator of our state, was in Sandoval County, New Mexico, on the banks of the Rio Grande River, across the river from Albuquerque. And I'll never forget, he said, I told my wife, John Erling is coming to interview me today. And she said, oh, that ought to be good because you are your favorite topic. And so we interviewed him and he did a great job. Now his former wife, LaDonna Harris, who lives not too far from him and they are very good friends, I interviewed her over out at the University of Tulsa. I went to Washington, D.C., James R. Jones. He was former congressman, ambassador to Mexico, on the staff of LBJ as an appointment secretary, chief of staff. He was also chairman of the American Stock Exchange. That was definitely a worthwhile trip to go to Washington, D.C. to interview him. Henry Bellman, I went to his farm, his home place, 7 miles east and 1 mile south from Billings. And he would just enjoyed it so much. And his hand was shaking after a while. And I said, do you want to quit this now? He said, no. He says, I want to keep doing this. Bart Conner, his facility in Norman, Oklahoma, was at the Bart Conner Gymnastics Academy. Interviewed Fred Drummond up in Pawhuska, which is the center now of the book, Killers of the Flower Moon. David Green, Hobby Lobby, was in his office in Oklahoma City. I'll never forget. He says, John, he says, I'm not too into the computers and all. He says, I keep my own books over here. And he reached back and he grabbed out books and he had made pencil entries. He says, yes, I have other people who do this in computer, but for me, I just use pencils. That was fun. Oral Roberts, interviewed him in Newport Beach, California. That was an interesting experience. Thomas Gene Gilchrist, the grandson of Thomas Gilchrist Sr., Nacogdoches, Texas, between Houston and Dallas. Chope Phillips, son of Wade Phillips, Elliott in Virginia. They're dear people. Chope means shorty in Spanish, by the way. Went to Amarillo, Texas, in their office. Curly Lewis, he played fiddle, as we say, for Bob Wills and all on the stage of Crane's Ballroom. Scott Momaday, poet, artist, storyteller, teacher, novelist. Went to his condominium in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on the north side of the city. George Nye, interviewed him at Grand Lake. He was a big Grand Laker and promoted that. We did that at Cherokee Yacht Club. And then finally, one of interest, Lloyd Noble. We all know of the Lloyd Noble Center on the OU campus. Well, I interviewed his daughter, Ann Noble Brown. She was going to go fly to Colorado for an extended stay. So two people from that foundation joined her, and they flew to the Will Rogers Airport. I met them there. Then I got on the plane with them, and we flew to Gunnison, Colorado, and actually did the interview there. And then, of course, back all in the same day. And Lloyd Noble was very influential at OU in hiring a very young Bud Wilkinson. So those are some of the places that I have ventured in my travels for Voices of Oklahoma.
There must be some stories behind those stories, and I'm not sure that you covered those at that point, but if you've got some thoughts about how you did it and the stories behind stories, that's got to be an interesting aspect of what you've done.
Yeah, it is. And there are surprises, too, along the way. Marion Opala, he was the Chief Justice of our Supreme Court. I interviewed him in 2010, and he was 89 years old, and he was looking forward to his 90th birthday, and he died 4 days after the interview.
Oh, my.
And his accent is so pure and so wonderful. You know, he came out of Poland when the Germans invaded in 1939, Lodz, Poland. He was there, worked for the British, and we have his story. And so that was a major surprise to have him die. Now, remember John Williams of the Williams Company?
Oh, sure.
He was such a big, intimidating guy, really, in a way. You probably were around him. Well, I was fearful of him. And Walt Helmrich actually put me onto that story. And when I called him, he said, yeah, I can do this. He says, but don't ask for any money. Well, I didn't ask him for any money.
And wouldn't have.
and wouldn't have, right. Well, it turned out he couldn't have been nicer. And when we finished the whole interview, he said, well, sit down. He says, let's just visit. And he showed me his office and so forth. So this guy who did so much for our community was just a nice, sweet man. So that probably was a surprise. Now, here's a big surprise. I interviewed Bill Warren of St. Francis Hospital. We talked about his father coming to Tulsa and all. And Bill stands up at the end of the recording, and he says, so what are your financial needs? Well, I'm just a North Dakota farm boy. disc jockey, radio guy.
You were ready for that, right?
Well, I had to prime myself real fast. And I said, John, if you don't ask this man who has the money for what you need, you're a wimp. You're a loser. So I said, well, Bill, we're just now finishing up building our website, and that'll cost $20,000. And I said, that's my financial need. So he says, well, okay, he says, and he says, I'll be back. And he comes back, he says, no, my assistant is gone. He says, I'll get back with you later. So I'm putting my equipment away. He comes back, no, he says, sit down. If Bill Warren says, sit down, you sit down. I sat down, and he walked in, and he handed me a check for $20,000. Is that amazing?
It is amazing.
Amazing story. I hugged him. I didn't kiss him, but I hugged him. And I thanked him. And that $20,000 was so timely at that point. So what a wonderful surprise on the part of Bill Warren. Bob Kurland was a 7-foot basketball player. He played at OSU for Henry Iba. And then he ended up in Bartlesville. And he worked for Phillips Petroleum. And he played for the club team, Phillips 66. He was 7 foot tall. He also played against George Mikan, then playing for the Minneapolis Lakers, now the Los Angeles Lakers. And so it was a big story to have these two big men play against each other. Bob Kurland in that interview said, actually, maybe we were fudging, maybe neither one of us were 7, but boy, they were sure 6'11", or something like that. Well, the reason I bring that up is when I came home, I didn't have a thing on my recorder. I was devastated. And I called his wife immediately. I said, I am so sorry. I have to come back because I didn't get anything on my recorder. She said, no problem. I came back, and he actually did a better job the second time around. And then I started traveling with 2 recorders, one as a backup, to make sure that wouldn't happen again, and it hasn't happened again. All right, here is probably the most embarrassing moment of all these stories. I interviewed Wilma Mankiller. What a special woman she was. And I finished the interview in Tahlequah at the Cherokee headquarters, and Chad Smith came in to visit with us. I had known Chad for way back, and of course, Chad and Wilma were friends. And I had just finished talking about, with Wilma, how her family came on the Trail of Tears. The federal government had forced them to come to Oklahoma. And then there was the federal relocation plan. They wanted to remove Native Americans to other parts of the country, to Chicago and elsewhere. And so she had just finished telling me about how her family moved to San Francisco. And she said the federal government dropped them off in a red light district. That's how they were treated by the federal government. Okay, this is the embarrassing part. I said, well, my parents, grandparents, came from Norway, and the federal government gave them 160 acres to homestead, and I am here because of that Homestead Act by the federal government. And Dick, as I said it, I was embarrassing myself, and they both just stared at me. They didn't say a darn word. They didn't say, oh, that's good, or anything like that. And I knew I had stepped in the big pile. How embarrassing that was. I should never have done it. So, you know, these stories are good, but you have to be careful when and who you're telling them to. You will appreciate this. Mel Myers has been my editor since the very beginning. Mel Radio Myers, Mel in the Morning. He was in KMOD, Z104.5, Star 103, and most recently on The Drive at 92.9. His passion for music is a musician himself, and like you, a production voice of several accounts in Tulsa. Still is doing that, by the way. There aren't many people who can reprimand me without me fighting back. And he'll say, well, you were in a room and sounded hollow, or there was a buzz in the room, and you shouldn't have done that, or whatever. Well, all I say is, yes, sir, Mel, you are right. And he has rescued, through technology, many of my interviews, when volumes were low, he was able to increase the volume. He saved many, many an interview. So Mel, you listen to this. I'm very grateful to you. I've told you many times how grateful I am. And then he helped me with the editing of it as well. Can hand it off to him, who wasn't there, and then he did the editing. So as much as credit as we get in public, behind the scenes is the basement.
A key to the whole thing.
Oh, there's no question about that. So I just needed to share that.
That's all wonderful. Right. Wonderful idea. Wonderful thought that you recall all that and be able to pass it on to other people who might really be interested in that idea and
right.
What was done.
Right.
Have you learned anything specific from this? I mean, is there some one particular thing that has triggered your thoughts about things?
Well, I feel like I've had a 15-year crash course in Oklahoma history. And certainly there are historians out there who have dedicated their life to document the history of Oklahoma no more than I do, but I sure know a lot of stories. I look at it like this, like I'm a drone overlooking these stories, looking down, viewing these stories. I think maybe they call that anthropology, the study of humanity, the study of human behavior, anthropology. That's what they do. And so, yes, you can see a path, a line, if you will, on how their lives played out, with some with a specific talent at birth. Others found their way. And the connections they made, unknowing to them, but in looking back, it made sense. What I have learned is that teachers make a difference. Clayton Vaughn, who's no longer with us, who actually interviewed me for voicesofoklahoma.com, and you hired him out of Cushing. Well, it was a local radio station looking for someone to help them on the weekends, and the station asked the speech teacher if she knew of a candidate. And in that moment, she went to Clayton. And now you know how he became a newscaster at 6 and 10 on Channel 6. But you were the one instrumental to bringing him to Tulsa.
Thank you for that credit.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Bart Connor, the gymnast, there was a teacher by the name of Les Land, and he said, Bart, I think you have some potential to do something in gymnastics. Bart, of course, is an Olympic gold medalist. And he said, I walked into that gymnasium and I knew in an instant, this is where I belong. But it was a teacher who did that. Guy Logsdon, an expert on Woody Guthrie, Western music and a musician, gives credit to Arthur D. Harrison, a teacher in Ada, who he says is the greatest teacher he ever had, taught him grammar, encouraged him to write. So teachers listening, not that you needed to have validated anymore, but you do make a difference. Alex Adwan, editorial writer for the Tulsa World. Miss Bessie Lee Harris, interested him in politics. And then his grandmother had a poem and published in the Maude newspaper, and that's how he started getting into writing, and he became a member of the Oklahoma Journalism Hall of Fame. And one more, Frosty Troy, founding editor of the Oklahoma Observer, Tulsa Tribune. He worked, had his commentaries on KRMG, and he was influenced by a Catholic nun, Frosty Troy. So those are teachers who are influential. That's what I have learned. Also, generally speaking, artistic gifts are apparent at a very early age. The noted artist Charles Banks Wilson, he painted our murals in our state capitol. He drew Will Rogers from life, and he also drew Robert Taft, the former Senator Robert Taft, from life. And he said, I was drawing when I was tall enough to reach under the table and draw. That's when the writing, the artistic ability began for him. Wanda Jackson was known as Rockabilly Queen, born in Maude, Oklahoma. She was 4 years old when her father bought her a guitar, 4 years old. Jay O'Malley, whose artwork, painting, work, sculptures, seen in galleries, Smithsonian, National Academy of Design, he said, when I was in the third grade, I remember the nuns would call my mother and said, well, your boy is hard to handle because he doesn't follow classes too well. He's always sitting there drawing pictures. And then Janet Jay joined Buck Owens, known for her blue violin. At 2.5 years old, they put a violin in her hands, and she began to make sense on it, and I wouldn't been able to do that. John Brooks Walton, well-known architect, published many books about mansions. He said he was 3 or 4 years old when he knew that's what he wanted to do. So when I cite these examples, I think it's important for all of us, if we notice something in a young child and an interest, say, wow, maybe they're interested in that. We need to encourage them as much as possible. Now, I'm going to blab on one more time here, Dick. There are defining moments in all of our lives when something happened either to change the course of our history or add to it, to extend the journey we're on. Defining moments. Quick trip. Burt Holmes meets Chester Cadjo on the sidewalk in Tulsa. I said, and Burt was looking for investors. I said, Burt, if you hadn't met Chester Cadjo on that day, would you have thought to go to him? He says, no. It was just spur of the moment. A defining moment for Chester Cadjo and now his family. Billy Parker was working at Quick Trip when he heard an ad on KFMJ saying they were looking for someone to join their staff. He dropped the mop, got in his car, and drove out to the radio station. And that changed his entire life. The real estate man, John Housam, was in the Korean conflict. Staff sergeant, he was leading his squad on a path. And he happened to step off the path. And those who didn't were blown up by a bomb. A defining moment for him. Betty Boyd, TV personality, Channel 6 and 8. Her defining moment came when she was asked to audition for Channel 6 because she had been a spokesperson for the March of Dimes. They said, would you come in and just audition for us? Well, we know what a personality she became and went on to be elected to our state legislature. Tommy Alsup, the story of Flips a Coin with Richie Valens on the Buddy Holly tour, and flips a coin and he doesn't fly on that plane that crashed. That was his absolute defining moment. So those are pretty dramatic. For many of us, they're not as dramatic as that, but as I'm in this drone looking down at all these stories, that's what I have.
Incredible highlights.
Yeah.
Of your involvement, really.
Yeah.
Did you get any turndowns or conflicts or simply non-approval of doing this interview?
Good question. I have chased a couple of people. One died recently. But for the most part, I would say 99% of them have been very willing. Dick, it helped me enormously to have been on the radio because people knew me here and in Oklahoma City.
How long were you on the air?
I was 30 years here on KRMG. So when, you see, this is almost like this was meant to be, because I can call somebody, John Erling is on the phone here. Oh, yeah, John, you know. So it wasn't a stranger asking them to be interviewed. Only one asked if we could re-edit what he said, and we accommodated that. But beyond that, there haven't been any major issues.
That's interesting that you just said that, because one of my other questions was, after recording these people, do they have the option to change or redo or eliminate any of the material that they gave you?
And absolutely right. Yeah, yeah, of course. I want them to be happy because, Dick, I want you to know that their families are going to be listening to this, and their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren. And so I would absolutely accommodate them in any way. And most of them have just done it, and I never heard from them again. I've never been a note writer, but after every interview, I write a handwritten note, and I send it to them, thanking them for their time and for their participation in this website. They deserve at least that kind of attention. So I have written well over 200 thank you notes, and I'm not a note writer. And, you know, people say you're going to run out of stories. Well, Dick, you know, there are 4 million people living in Oklahoma. And so I'm just scratching the surface with what I've done now.
Well, you covered a big bunch of people that you've had an opportunity to talk with. Are there any special people or special things that have come your way that you maybe haven't touched on at this point?
Right. I call them special nuggets. Ponca Nation, Cynthia Warner talked about her father was forced to walk from Nebraska to Oklahoma. Kenneth Renberg, World War II, he came from Germany to fight Hitler. Barbara Santee came from a tar paper shack at 71st and Memorial to be a leader in women's issues, first to address AIDS. Porter Reed, he was a black baseball player in Muskogee. Jackie Robinson actually came to his house when these Negro teams would come through, and Muskogee was a big area where they actually played ball. Carrie Dickerson, her daughter tells her story, how Carrie protested the Black Fox nuclear plant. I know you remember that. Mm-hmm. Norma Eagleton, first female city councilor, first female corporation commissioner.
I knew Norma.
Yeah. I interviewed Catherine Kingsley, World War II. She was a cryptographer. She helped break the code of the Japanese. She worked directly for J. Edgar Hoover. And then you remember Steve Stevenson and Steve's bookstore.
Sure.
And he played tennis into his 90s. I had to schedule around his tennis schedule. And Reverend John Wolfe of the Unitarian Church, Clayton Vaughn, actually joined me on that. And as we talked about civil rights, Bill Vandiver talked about J. Paul Getty. But, you know, I talk a lot about names that people know. I'm really happy when there are people who they have never heard of somebody that I've interviewed him. This is not just for the rich and famous. This is for everybody. So when somebody says, I never heard of that person before, it makes me maybe happier than anything. Oh, good. Then I've introduced you to somebody who then have told their story. After all these years, I never thought this would happen to us. We have published two books now. John Hamill and I together put these two books together. John Hamill is a great writer, and I have provided the material for him. So we have volume one and volume two. We are now on the podcast platform where we put our interviews on podcasts. People enjoy that as they're walking, running, biking in their car. So we're on the podcast platform. I never thought that was going to happen 15 years ago when I started this in 2009. Now we've developed a learning center on the website where you dive deeper into Oklahoma history. And then we have certain topics, Holocaust survivors, philanthropy, lessons from entrepreneurs and business leaders, artists of Oklahoma, sit-ins during the civil rights movement. And so we write deeper about that than maybe came out in the interview. And then the stories that we've interviewed, those storytellers are laced into that in the Learning Center. A far more sophisticated presentation than I ever thought was going to be possible when I started this in 2009. But I am also happy to tell you that we have entered into a partnership with the Oklahoma History Society. Now, they've been very helpful by suggesting interviews, financially supportive, and promoting our interviews to their enormous following. Trey Thompson is the executive director. He helped make this happen, and I want to thank him for this great partnership between the voicesofoklahoma.com and the Oklahoma History Society. And as we wrap up here, I want to give credit to the foundations that have been with me all along. George Kaiser Family Foundation, Grace and Franklin Burnson Foundation, H.A. Mary K. Chapman Charitable Trust, the Helmrich Trust, William S. E. Ann Atherton Foundation, and the Ann and Henry Zero Foundation, and the Williams Companies Foundation as well. And so they have been with me, and of course, everything takes money, but it's also a tribute to those foundations because they believe in the collection of Oklahoma history. I should give credit to the media partners, Tulsa World, and Tulsa People. As I do at the end of every email blast or when I speak in public about this, my mission is to tell everybody to record their family stories, because your offspring, your great-grandchildren, whatever, 10, 25 years from now are going to listen to your voice. You know, eventually when people die, the voice fades away and we can't remember the sound of it. And so it's important to have the voices telling the story. So I encourage everybody to listen to this. Anybody listens to voicesofoklahoma.com to encourage your story. You'll be glad you did. And Dick, that's for you as well.
Thank you, John. It's been a pleasure to be a part of your renewal of the past.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And thank you. I was honored to have you with me at the table. We're just a couple of old timers here. You're 88 years old. I'm 81. A couple of old radio guys just sitting talking about preserving history. Thank you, Dick.
That's great. Thank you, sir. Thank you for asking. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to our history of Voices of Oklahoma. You're invited to visit our website, which is filled with many interesting stories told by Oklahomans. As we enter our 15th year of preserving history, we encourage you to share this website with your friends and family. It's an entertaining way to learn about our great people. Preserving Oklahoma's legacy, one voice at a time. VoicesofOklahoma.com.